All right, people. She Dawn get knocked up.
Yes, she did.
And she is still hustling. A rising star on the grind, like nobody's business. I've seen it all. Okay. We have a first here today on the show. You are my first pregnant guest.
Oh my God.
On my show. So I'm not going to keep, Barbie's not going to keep you all on the edge of your seats any longer. All right. I am joined by the amazing Carolyn Miller, who's a New York fellow tri-state biatch, but down here doing the country thing, a rising star in country music. So just a little bit about Carolyn, aside the fact that she is crushing it and literally with child about to give birth on stage, like Dolly Parton's muse. It's like a whole thing. So here's a little bit about Carolyn. So your music was streamed this year in 142 countries. You played this year the Barefoot Country Music Fest along the likes of Darius Rucker, Kid Rock, Blake Shelton. You were named Next Up Now Artist by CMT. You were named One to Watch by the Nashville Songwriters Association International. You've performed with Lee Bryce, Sam Hunt, and Dustin Lynch, if I have that correct. So something about you that really struck me, and I'll fill you guys in on how we connected, but that you are so not about being put in a box. Like, my show is all about breaking out of the boxes society puts us in, hence booby, brainy, Barbie. Yeah. And for you being somebody who is so pregnant and so hustling and performing and killing it, and even the optics of that are so rare. And I love when we met at the event we met at, I hosted for the Women's Music Business Association here in Nashville, and you performed, you said to the crowd, you can do both. I was always told you can, and you're living proof of that. So Carolyn Miller, welcome to the show, baby.
Yes, queen.
Baby with a baby. We're going to have so much fun.
Thank you so much for having me. Thrilled to be here. And that was such a fabulous intro. You did your homework, girl.
Oh, I mean, the notes are speaking.
The notes are noting.
Don't let the boobs deceive you. So first off, before we talk about your journey and being somebody who so refreshingly breaks out of that box as a woman, I want you to do a little bit of a humble brag for these guys and let them know, like, it's all right. Like, the top of the top, like, big people who have been in your orbit, you've worked with, you're moving and shaking with, collabed with, what have you.
Yeah, I mean, my story is a little bit of a funky one. I'm sure we'll dive into it, but I've shared TV and movie sets with people like Ben Affleck and Mariska Hargitay on Law & Order SVU, and I did a lot of stuff in that world, so that's really kind of where my backstory began.
Wait a second. She drops this nonchalantly. She's like, so I'm sorry, J-Lo. I'm Ben Affleck's What? Like, because when I was a red carpet reporter, I've interviewed Casey Affleck, who's a whole vibe and a thing. Ben Affleck, do you see the memes of him just always perpetually in distress?
Yes, like always.
So how did – I was with him at an event once, and he was just over his whiskey, just like, why am I here? And I was like, same, you know, that kind of vibe. So tell me about how does this even happen?
Yeah, well, I'm from Long Island, 45 minutes outside Manhattan, born and raised, and I just always had the bug to be on stage from a very young age. I don't have family or anyone that's in the industry. I just came out of the womb kicking and screaming and that I wanted to sing and be on TV, and my parents were like, what do we do with this child? So you do what you do with every three-year-old little girl that likes to do that. You put them in dance. From there, it went to community theater. And then I used to come home from school in first and second grade and look at the TV and cry. And my parents would be like, what's wrong? And I'm like, why are these kids on TV and I'm not on TV? Because we'd watch Nickelodeon or Disney. And my parents were like, I don't know. We have to figure this out. And so I started working professionally in showbiz as a kid. So I grew up doing film, TV, movies, theater, voiceovers, commercials, everything. So from the time I've been little, I've been, you know, kind of around celebrities from a young age. And so those were just some of the people that I worked with through the years growing up.
And now
it's country music.
Right.
And so, you know, I've gotten to share the stage with Lee Bryce. Probably a career highlight for me was singing "I Hope You're Happy Now" with him on stage. Awesome. Sold out, you know, in front of thousands of people. And Lee is someone who my husband and I love. And get this, every year on our anniversary, Lee coincidentally would always have a concert, like, in our town in New York. My husband's 30th birthday, everything. So we would always get tickets and go to his concerts years before I even started doing country music. He was always our favorite. So then having that full circle moment of getting to open for him and then getting to, like, perform with him was, like, epic.
That's so cool.
But that was really neat. And, you know, getting to be a part of some of these major festivals with people that I've just grown up loving, like Carrie Underwood, and have your name be on the same poster as them and the same t-shirts as them, you know. So, you know, those are some of my favorite moments and highlights. But
and you have such a bright my audience knows, like, I don't kiss ass. I don't just say shit to say, right? Yeah. We're tri-state girls. We don't roll like that. Sorry. Like, we I'm sorry. We don't have time to kill. And something about you that struck me, besides when I saw you perform for the first time that night, is how much of a hustler you are. Like, this girl is literally 7 months pregnant. You can't tell because she looks so tiny. And she is making shit happen. She's like, okay, I'm literally like, it is me. I am she. Like, this is me. She's like, okay, so I'm here. I'm here for a day until I go to New York. How do we make this shoot happen? Like, I'm going to do it. Like, who does that when they're aww, when they're this pregnant? So, so much thank respect you. To you. You for that. Let's talk a little bit about that, right? Because, again, like, the idea of being both. So we met, like I said, at the WNBA Awards. And this is with, like, the movers and shakers of influence in Nashville. Execs and artists and the women who are, like, really paving the way and building, like, stature and to be the high profile, powerful, the Carrie Underwoods, like you're talking about. Like, these are, like, the women in town. And so you take to the stage and you're like – and even seeing a pregnant woman in her element, and especially in the entertainment business, like, perform – we're going to get into this, but it's so almost raw to the eye. And it's like, whoa. And it's crazy because, like, it's how we all got here. It's the most universal thing. So talk about what you said that night of, like, you know, I always was told it was one or the other, and here you are doing both. Like, that, a little bit of that journey and what you've learned so far.
Yeah, I love that. And I love talking about this because I feel like it's something that's not totally talked about and is a little bit taboo. And, you know, I mean, I'd be lying if I said in concerts over the last few months I haven't worn things that just not hide it, but just so it's not so in your face. But I thought, what better place to embrace your bump and embrace this stage and season of your life that you're in than an award event for women in music?
Right.
For, you know, because we are all in the same boat. We are all juggling these things. And so it was really fun for me to embrace, like, the tight dress and come on stage and do it. But, you know, I think part of the stigma, especially as women, is like, you know, no one, you're kind of, your career's over. You're not going to be able to do both. Yeah. You have to pick and choose. You have to, like, you know, and it took me a few years because I don't want to say I believe that mentality, but it definitely was always a voice in my head that made me hesitant to enter into this chapter. And honestly, what really gave me the courage to kind of embrace this next season of life was seeing other women who had done it and done it successfully pave the way. So Carrie Underwood has two kids. Gabby Barrett, I think, is 23 years old and is on her third child right now. Both girls of Maddie and Tay have children. The girls of Runaway June have children. Maren Morris has a three-year-old. So when I started looking and peeking behind the curtain at all these artists that I love and have worked with, I'm like, all right, they've all done it. They managed to do it. And then I was talking to people in the industry about it. And I think it was Emily Shackleton, who's such an incredible songwriter in town. And she's been just such a wonderful friend to me that I've gotten to know. She was like, don't ever let anyone tell you that you can't do both, because you can. And she's someone who's a hit writer and a mom of two kids. And she juggles it all so beautifully. And then I had another friend in artist development at one of the big labels who was like, Carolyn, artists go through seasons. You go through your writing season, you go through your recording season, you go through your touring season. You know, we just restructure your seasons around what's going on. So if you are pregnant and having the baby, you're of course not going to be touring then. We'll push the tour until later in the year. And kind of hearing everyone's stories and everyone's perspectives and the incredible women in this town who reassured me that you don't have to pick and choose mm-hmm. and ignore those stigmas really helped give me that courage and motivation. And I will say, now entering into that, now being one of them, I've seen it's possible. I've seen how you can do it.
There's a weird thing where it's almost like pregnant women are like elderly. Like even just now when you like in that, it's like, are you okay? Like even just now she's sitting and I'm like, I don't want to break you. Right.
No.
So when you're, I think that's something that makes it such a rare sight, especially in entertainment and pop culture. Like someone that sticks out to me, who's also goals, is Jesse James Decker. When she did an iconic, like flip my hair video is what it's called. And it's her with, you know, four or five pregnant women in these like tight, you talk about in your face, like these tight black bodysuits, and they're all like literally like a hand is like coming out of the, like it's, but they're dancing and they look so hot. And again, it's so rare to see. So how does it, like when you're actually up there performing, how does it act? Does it feel different from when you're not pregnant? Like how does it literally physically feel?
Oh gosh, I would say, I mean, you the one thing is you probably have to watch your breathing a little bit more. Like, don't get out of breath. So, you know, you have to watch like you're not like overly doing it, because where you may have been able to jump around the stage earlier, you know, you're going to run out of breath a little bit quicker. So it's about just like pacing yourself. Yeah. So I would say that's one thing that I've noticed is just you just have to be conscious of. And because I've seen, you know, some incredibly talented female artists in concert and they get easily out of breath. So I'd say that managing that when you're on stage, but I think, you know, I felt so powerful and beautiful and sexy and all the things at that Wonder Woman Awards event on Tuesday. And my bump was full out, full of sequins and rocking.
It was.
But I was like, you know what? We're celebrating women. Part of being a woman is motherhood for a lot of people. A lot of people in that room were mothers, and why not embrace that and celebrate that?
And it's like, it's what I talked about that night, right? Of feeling more powerful when you're multifaceted. And it almost is like, it's like a domino effect. It's like an avalanche. It's like, oh, wait, I can do this and I can do that. And I can be super talented and super smart and super hot and also pregnant. And and it's just like, you can't stop. I imagine that it adds almost like a layer of badassness to how you feel. Cause it's like, oh, wait, oh, I'm with child and I'm also doing this.
Totally.
Than before you were pregnant.
Totally. And I think also like, you know, you have to hone in and focus even more so in on your goals. Time is of the essence. You don't have the luxury of you know, so you have to prioritize. And it forces you to think twice about what you're committing to, because your time is a little bit more limited. So it's like you have to make the most of it. So if anything, I think it makes you powerful, because you have to then say no to certain things. And you have to be a little bit pickier and choosier about what it is, that it almost in a way makes you even more powerful than before, because you have to get into that mentality and that mindset where you think more like a boss, you think more like a CEO, more of a leader, more at this elite level, because you don't have the luxury of time to say yes and do everything.
I love that, especially because women like me who are – there are a lot who – listen to the show and the dudes, you too. Like, shout out to you. We love you.
Love you.
But it's what you said really struck a chord with me of, you know, I mean, I'm someone who like goals to me is what you're describing, what you are, the Jesse James Decker, like having it all and doing it all. And I am that person who's like, I have to accomplish though this, this, and this, and a baby will just uproot everything and change your whole life. And how do you do everything? And so it's so true. Like I you know, we were talking about this the other night. Yeah. Like I'm someone, I'm so goal oriented, but at the same time, it's like, you know, you don't want that time to pass you by. Next thing you wake up and you're however old and you did, you know, it's definitely like it's a thing. Like it is certainly a thing.
Absolutely. And I also think it makes you richer as a human being and more fulfilled as a person. Like, I mean, even when I got married, I remember being like, oh my gosh, if I'm now married in the industry, are men not going to want to come to my
concerts?
That's
so
true. You know,
you
think about these things, but I'll tell you what, my most successful song to date is the song that I wrote the month of my wedding, in my feels about what it means to get married. Yeah. That's the song that went viral on TikTok that resonates with people, you know?
Dude, I've grappled with like, do I tell my audience like I have a boyfriend? Do I play up the single thing? Like it is so true.
Yeah.
So, but it's what you're describing. It's like the Luke Combs effect though, right? Like Luke Combs songs. I'm just like, like they're so what, you know, he was on Joe Rogan recently talking about, it's like what you're saying with the song you wrote, African American, it's like what the world needs.
Yeah.
And it just resonates too at the same time, right?
Totally. So. And, you know, I think that when you are just an authentic version of yourself as artists, you know, we look at what works that has worked for other artists. And then everyone tries to emulate that, right? Because you're like, that's what works. That's what cuts through. But that's what worked for that person and in an authentic way, which is what made it cut through. So it's like the more you embrace who you are and what you resonate with and what makes you different and share that, that's the stuff that cuts through. And for me, it was like where I was in my life, I was in my feels about getting married and saying I do. And I wrote the song from the heart that was never meant to be released. It was meant to be for my husband as a gift. I happened to share a clip of it and it took off and people used the song to walk down the aisle to it all over the world.
I love that.
And now the other day, you know, I shared a clip on social media of how we told our friends or our family that we were having a baby and I put their reactions and videos and that video went viral on TikTok and people are like, you know, and so it's just so crazy that these little personal moments of my life are the things that are just clicking with people and why shy away from that?
It's like I love the saying, we make plans and God laughs. It's like, we think we have to like present ourselves this way or like, so be like the hot single girl or whatever. And it's like, sure enough, what takes off. And I also love what you said about, oddly enough, like now being pregnant, it makes you step more into that boss role and prioritizing power. I love that because again, I think that's a concern, a genuine concern for women like me. It's like, oh wait, will it, not take away, but like take away from the focus if you're on a grind, if you have a passion. That shit is real. So let's dive. Something that fascinates me is why are, and we're going to get into more taboo and like the state of country music, you know, on the whole, but why is it that pregnant women in entertainment, we talk about it being taboo, right? And it's almost like, again, it's rare to see, it's whether it's uncomfortable, whatever it is. And what, like I said, it's the most unifying thing. Like, hi, it's like how we're all here. My most, you know, my favorite example that's the most iconic is Demi Moore's 1991 Vanity Fair cover where she's naked and pregnant. And it went before viral was a thing, right? And it was shot by Annie Leibovitz. What's so iconic about that is that it was supposed to be private. It was supposed to be for her and Bruce Willis at the time. And at the time, pregnant women were only shot from the chest up. And so sure enough, it becomes a cover, sells like twice as much, you know, than it normally would. And so to me, like, let's get to it. Why is this so taboo? To me, it's like, okay, because it's women being sexual. Like, yeah, I had sex and now I had a baby. Like, that's the only logical thing I can think of like why it's even taboo in the mainstream, right? To see a woman like so pregnant and performing on a magazine cover naked, like whatever it is. Like, what is it?
You know, I don't know. A part of me though, my experience, to be fully honest, is I think it's a little bit more in our own heads.
As is everything with women holding ourselves back or themselves back.
Like when I got pregnant and I had to go to my manager, who's a dude and he's amazing. But when I had to be like, oh God, I'm going to have to tell him like I'm pregnant and all of his hard work is like, you know, it might be paused for just a few months and whatever. And I was like, a part of me felt guilty for having to share this news with him. Like, am I disappointing him? Am I letting him down? Like, And he was the first person to jump up and down screaming for me and be like, this is the best news. I'm so excited for you. And he's a dad of three boys and he gets it. You know, same with everyone in the industry I've shared it with. They're like, congratulations. This is amazing. This is the best thing. I mean, I was sitting next to this wonderful woman at the WNBA Awards, Cherie, who got up and spoke. And she reached over. She goes, I've got twins and I've got, I think she said, and a son. And it is the best thing. And if you need to take off a few months, you are never going to get that time back. So you soak that up as long as you can. This isn't going anywhere.
That's true.
And when that's you start so seeing true. The beautiful feedback from everyone, it's like, I feel silly. Why was I ever nervous to share that news? Why was I? Yeah. And if anything, like the fans who have been following me for years and were with me when I got married and were with me when the wedding song went viral and now it's the natural progression of life and I'm having a baby, like they're also excited and they want the content and stuff. And so I feel like it's more just us in our heads maybe having this mentality of like, oh gosh, because everyone in this day and age, and look, it might have been different 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, but in 2023, women are so just celebrated more than they were years ago. and are so much more in the forefront of the conversations than we were years ago, that I have found nothing but embrace and celebration around my announcement, to be honest.
I also love what you said about, you said it was your manager who you told the guy. That, I think, rings true for so many things for women. I call this out on my show all the time, right? Like, I said this at the event the other night. Like, we're in an age where it's like, blame the patriarchy, men are to blame, blah, 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 blah. With so many of these issues, whether it be, like, how we look and being beautified on Instagram or this or that or not getting pay or not getting roles. Like, I'm sorry. Half of this shit is women like perpetuating it and putting it in each other's heads, yes. Our own heads, because with so many of these issues, like, I've had the most supportive men in my career, whether it be, you know, how I look physically, like so many things, even like when you think about filters and all this shit on Instagram, women perpetuate that, you know, the surgeries, all this, and dudes are like, I actually like, I'm good with you natural, right? It's like all the, and even in the workplace too, it's like, again, I've had so many milestones in my career because of the men who had my back.
Yeah.
And I love that you said that because it's so true.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think it's just us a little bit in our own heads of second guessing or questioning, or maybe it's our own insecurity about like, am I making the right decision? Am I whatever? But I think when you get past that, it's has so not been a thing. If anything, it has benefited me in so many ways. You know, and the other thing I'm going to say too, and this goes back to like owning our power in this time, because again, we don't have the luxury of just time, is it has forced me to hone in working with deadlines and timelines, right? I'm due February 17th. I can't fly as of 35 weeks, which is early January. So I'm going to shut down come the holidays. And by shut down, I mean like I'm not going to be on tour or traveling. I'm going to be focusing on social media and writing the music and getting ready for the album, doing the behind the scenes stuff. But if I wasn't pregnant, I would be spread thin worrying about booking shows and setting up a photo shoot and let's do a music video and then let's also write. And then we have got shows I'm playing, blah, blah, blah. This kind of eliminates that and forces you, rather than being like a jack of all trades, master of none, you have to hone in on specific goals because you have deadlines to meet. Mm-hmm. And that has been the first time I've really had to be like, okay, what can I do to this point? And then what can I do in these months? Because I can't do the other things in those months.
I love that. And it's, again, that idea of, like, we think something, we have a misconception. It's like someone like me would think, like, a baby throws your goals out the window temporarily. That's your life. And it's actually, like, no, it actually makes me, like, prioritize and have a timeline and, like, be the CEO. I love that.
Yes.
And I also – so I'm going to pivot to, like, the bigger scheme of country right now. But something that I was going to get to – and I feel like you've kind of addressed this. You know, we are two tri-state girls in the Bible Belt. So we're kind of, I feel like, seeing everything from, like, one foot in, one foot out, right?
Yeah.
And something that – I don't know about you, but that I – you know, I heard this just recently, right, is the idea of, like, you know, women are meant – this kind of old, archaic idea of like women are meant to be mothers, and this whole idea of like feminism is ruining that, and like that your career won't leave a legacy or won't keep you warm at night or won't like, and again, breaking out of the box. I think everything, like our society has no chill. And like for me, it's like, again, doing it all, like having a happy medium. But I feel like, you know, just briefly touch on that and the idea of, again, it's like you know, being both and not soul. And again, if you want to be one or the other, that's great for you, right? If you want to be the CEO, if you want to be the stay-at-home mom, like that's great for you. But the idea again of like, in a weird way of like that box still existing.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, you know, you have to have a support system around you. You really do. And I am so blessed to have an incredibly hands-on husband, my parents that are willing at the drop of a hat. We were talking about our families moved to Florida in the pandemic. Yeah, like every northerner, they got out of the cold and went down south. But parents that are willing to hop on a plane anytime I need their help, in-laws that live 5 minutes away and are willing to come over as much as we need help, siblings and sister-in-laws that live down the block. So, I mean, I am able to continue to do these things because I have that. And I do think it would be a bit more challenging if I was a single parent or if, you know, I was the sole responsibility caretaker for a child, juggling and all. But I do think that it just takes a lot of OCD organizational planning and being meticulous on your work and really putting in the time before you execute to really think the different plans through and how can I make this work and what do we need to do and get creative and think outside the box, right? I've never been a box person. I love a challenge. I love thinking creatively and thinking like, okay, like when I get a no or a door closes, it's not like a personal thing. It's just like, that's not the door for me. So where is the door for me? And let me figure out which door this is.
I love that.
You know, and if it's not a door, maybe I got to build my own house with its own door that people can come in, kind of thing, right?
Period.
Yeah.
So perfect that you said, you know, breaking out of the box, because I want to pivot since you're such a straight shooter. And again, like, so, you know, have such a good grasp on all of this and are obviously like so successful already. When it comes to country music on the whole, like, I'm so curious for your take about the chaotic state of it right now. I'm just going to, like, how it's become so politicized, right? And I'm just going to give some examples. Yeah. But you have, like, Luke Combs getting shit for covering Fast Car, the Tracy Chapman iconic song. Like, okay, is art art or not? Like, what is actually the reason? Insane. You have things like CMT pulling Jason Aldean, Try That in a Small Town. You have like Maren Morris's big thing about like her departing country music because she thinks everybody's like, my audience knows how I feel about that, but like thinks everyone's like transphobe, racist, misogynist, right? So when it comes to all of this, like if there's like an example that sticks out to you, you know, Kid Rock's controversial, like how do you see the state of it on the whole, as a whole? Like, what's your view on it right now?
Well, I think a few things. One, I will say, you know, currently, I believe the stat, and don't quote me on this, but this is what I think, is I think this past week and the last like 2 weeks, there hasn't been one female country artist in the top 20 on country radio in 2 weeks. So there definitely is, obviously, you know, things that we have to continue to fight for and work through and things like that. But I think it gets a little crazy and ridiculous. And I think social media is, you know, it's a love-hate relationship. We're grateful for it because it brings us to like the listeners like right now. And I have a fan base and so do you because we have the access to social media. But people get very brave on social media. People speak not factually on social media. It gets really nasty and unnecessary and the cancel culture and all this stuff, which is just out of control. But I also feel like with some of these controversies you mentioned, like it's also important to note, like Luke Combs covering Tracy Chapman's Fast Car, it won for, I think, Song of the Year, Single of the Year.
Her version, by the way, not Luke Combs. And if you're lost on this, it's because Luke Combs is a white man. Tracy Chapman was a black woman. And it's like, why is he blah, blah. And it's, again, it's like, are we going to let art be art or not? And it's like, right, she won the CMA
award.
She won.
And the award went to her as the songwriter.
Yeah.
And it was the first time in history, I think, that a solo female black songwriter ever won that award or one of those awards. So like, yes, did it happen significantly later than we all would have liked it to?
Right.
But it's thanks to Luke that that song is back on the map. Her name is back on the map. I think that is an incredible milestone and is a beautiful thing that should be celebrated.
And it's also like people will argue like, oh, well, it took like a white man to get that. It should. And it's also the idea of, you know what? You know, we're sitting in Rhonda Adkins' office. And if you guys remember, I had Rhonda and her daughter on my show sitting right here almost a year ago. And she's somebody who came into town, you know, made Trace Adkins a superstar when women in any significant positions were unheard of. And I love her mindset of like, you know what? I am going to like, I'm going to work with these men. I'm going to use this opportunity. What can I learn from them? How can I use it as a stepping stone? How can I beat them at their own game? And that's what it is. It's like, no, I'm going to like use this stepping stone. And it's like, okay.
Yeah,
like, totally. I love that.
Go ahead. No. You keep going.
So before we're getting kind of out of time here, kind of like in this vein, I feel like there's a really also a weird contentious thing in country music right now where it's either like, I hear this a lot, where it's music that's like beers, bitches, and trucks, right? and then, you know, more substantial songs, because then you also have songs like, you know, Jelly Roll Save Me or like Lainey Wilson Get in the Truck, right? That are so deep and dark, right? But that resonate with so many people. So how do you kind of see, again, where it's that line? To me, it's like there's a line of like virtue signaling where it's like you're all assholes and you're all bad versus something, someone like a Jelly Roll who's like, I have this dark issue. It's me. And like people resonate with that, or something like Get in the Truck about abuse, right? So what to you is the line of like entertainment and also, you know, this resonates with people, and then also where it's like nonsense virtue signaling? Like, again, how do you kind of see all that?
You know, I think it just comes down to writing from the heart, writing who you are, writing what resonates with you. Jelly Roll's story is incredible. You know, when he's talking about, like, you know, Need a Favor, his song, and Save Me, like, that is a real thing that he lived through. And that is who his audience is. And they resonate, you know, with that kind of sound. You know, I think like with my weddings, I'm not obviously on the Jelly Roll level comparing it, but I think there's something to be said is like, I sat in my bedroom the month of my wedding to just write a song for my husband as a gift. No one was ever supposed to hear that song. And it just came from the heart. And so I don't know if I'm totally answering the question, but I think that when you just write something that's real, that you connect with, and however it feels good and right to you, you will find the audience for your music. So rather than writing to the audience that you think wants your music, or writing to the audience that you think is out there, just write to what is genuine to you, and you will find that audience. I was not intentionally seeking females in the 20 to 30 demographic. But when the wedding song went viral, that was who was drawn into my music. And those are the same people that are as equally excited for my motherhood journey. So now that I found my audience, I am conscious of that when I'm writing from the heart, like I'm keeping my marketing or my merch in mind for who my audience fan base is that I cultivated. You know, Jelly Roll is like the unsung, he's like the underdog, right?
The underdog story.
We do. And like the way he gives back to all the charities and other people that have been in the situations that he's been in, like that is his audience that he sing to. And so I think it's amazing when the artists make music. Look, Jason Aldean, everyone can say what they want about Try That in a Small Town, but that resonates with his audience and his crowd.
I mean, it goes to number one in like 5 milliseconds. Like, and what does that say? Yeah.
And that was staying true to himself. And kudos to him. He got a lot of shit for it, whatever. But like, he stayed true to what he stood by and believe. And if everyone else in this industry and world can say what they want and sing what they believe in, it doesn't matter whether you agree or not. He has a right to sing about those things. And if you don't like it, you don't have to download that song. You don't have to listen to it.
I completely agree. It's like, hit next. Don't go see that movie. Don't go read that book. Like, whatever it is.
Right.
that's what a way to end it. And I have one last thing for you, but man, oh man, Carolyn Miller, what a breath of fresh air, especially with, you know, everything going on. You talk about how toxic like cancel culture and social media. And I'm someone like, I've been weighing in a lot on everything going, you know, as a Jewish woman in the media, everything going on in Israel and the Middle East, and, you know, Hanukkah starts today. So this was just so refreshing and so needed, I think, for my audience too. Lastly for you, kind of with all of this, right? Funny enough, I talked about this in my last episode, but the notes ain't no and no mo. I talked about a conversation I had with somebody about Kid Rock, and because I had shared something Kid Rock, you know, said, and the person said, like, why are you supporting like a known racist, right? And so in my last episode, I really dive into the idea of like, X artists, maybe they said some things I don't agree with, or Kanye West, he said some things I think are absolutely abhorrent and disgusting. Can I appreciate and like some of the other things he's done in his music? Yeah.
Sure.
So same thing with Kid Rock, right? I don't have to agree, but I can still like other things they've done. So talk about being put in a box as an artist, separating the art from the artist, even you as a woman, a pregnant woman, whatever it is, your take on, this is like such a deep intellectual thing. This could go on forever, but like your take on separating, you know, the art from the artist, where you draw a line. And again, like being someone who is on stage, who's on the other side of that, how you see it, how you feel about that.
You know, I'm very blessed to just come from parents that really always champion me, and you can do anything that you want to do. And, you know, if someone else, my whole motto is kind of like, if someone else can do it, why can't you? Mm-hmm. Like when you think about that for a second, if someone else can do it, why can't you? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always had a lot of confidence growing up, and my dreams were always supported in every way. But I think I carried that mentality with me in every way. And you know, just this is a little bit of a long answer to this question, but I think it's important is, you know, I grew up doing, like I said, film, TV, commercials, theater, everything when I was 8 years old. I always said my whole life, I'm an actress, I'm going to be on Broadway. I'm an actress, I'm going to be on Broadway. I went to college at the Boston Conservatory for musical theater. I graduated with a Bachelor of Fine Arts degree in musical theater. I did really cool things in my 20s. I've guest starred in Law & Order SVU, and I've narrated cartoons on PBS, and I did commercials for TJ Maxx and Pepsi, like all these things in the showbiz world. And then when I got to like my mid-20s, I just hated having my power in somebody else's hands. I hated that the only time I was on stage was when I was cast in something. And I'm 5'8 and a half. I could lose out on roles because I was too tall. I wasn't blonde hair, blue eyes, so I didn't look like the woman that they cast as my mother. So I wasn't going to get that. And I got sick and tired of being like, I have a voice. I want to be on stage. I deserve to be on stage. I'm not going to keep sitting around waiting for, you know, someone else to give me that opportunity. And I was creatively hungry and starving. And so I turned to YouTube as a creative outlet for myself, other than I just wanted a place to sing and share a little bit of what I was doing. From there, very unintentionally, I started garnering an online fan base, which then led to people being like, when are you going to put out original music? And I'm like, I'm an actress. Like, people, I get scripts. Like, I don't really write songs. I look back, I've got, you know, hundreds of poems. Every time I was upset, I'd go write a poem and all these melodies, but I never put it together, so I never considered myself a songwriter. I'm 34 years old. I never came to Nashville. I never considered country music anything until the first time I think I ever got on a plane and came to Nashville. I was 29 years old, and I hadn't even recorded and put out music at that point.
Oh my God,
and
you've done all this in 5 years?
Yes, despite and a global Holy pandemic shit. Where the world right. stopped for a minute.
Holy shit.
So I share this because as a girl from Long Island, New York, right, yeah. who comes from a big, loud Italian family, Ditto. Who didn't grow up on country music, who never heard of Alan Jackson and Loretta Lynn and George Strait until 5 years ago when I started coming to Nashville. There was no country music station where I grew up. For someone who comes from a theater background, an acting background, who doesn't even live in Nashville, who's starting her career at 30 years old, I had every single thing against me. There is nothing on paper that says this is a good idea. And there was even a period of where parents were like, why is she singing country western music? Like, what are you doing with your life shifting? And I just had this calling, and Nashville has fulfilled me in a way. This community has fulfilled me in a way. This industry, the people here that I never knew existed, and a part of myself was unlocked. And I share that because don't let those stigmas and those boxes, like I said, define you. It's first of all, it's never too late. If someone else can't do it, why can't you? You know, no dream is too big. And those are the honest, true details of what my story and background is. And I share that. So for I hope it inspires people that, like you said, I've done a lot in a very short time with very little help around me. You know, I came to town not knowing a single person. I slept on couches and motels and
I feel that.
Would show yeah. up and go to writer's rounds by myself and sit there and try to just talk to someone next to me at the bar to like hopefully make a contact. And I'd make a spreadsheet. I'd go home. I'd write down everybody I met. And when I came to town next, I'd reach out to them and I'd add to it, you know, but like it's, you can do it. You just got to get creative with it. And so,
I mean, I think that's everything. Like that is goals. And I could so see people because people are so territorial in the business and not, and people be like, what do you, and especially in that, whatever, like I yeah. can see people be like, oh, what does she think? She's rolling up here after, you yeah. know, two, you know, put in your stripes like the rest of us.
Yeah.
And I love that. It's like, watch me, bitch, like says yeah. who. And I love what you said of like, they can, why can't I? And so I, Carolyn Miller, you talk to me, Taylor girl, that like not your first rodeo.
And that's why when we got to the topic of motherhood, I'm like, ah. This is easy.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about this box. You know, I've been breaking down doors and boxes Dang. My whole life. This is just on brand for what I do.
That is, I so resonate with so many parts of that. It's like, oh, I can't write this. I can't say this. I can't do this. Fucking watch me, bitch. So what a way to like go into the new year too with yeah. this mindset, like not to be cheesy, but damn, mic drop. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. Oh this God. Is so much fun.
I can't wait to
Let's
see
do it again.
You be legend. Like,
Let's do happening. It again.
You saw it here first, bitches. Okay.
Bye.
Thank Love you it. So
this
much.
Amazing. Love you. You're Thank such you. A rock star. You're Aww. So good.
Thank you.